Thank you for the presentation. Next, we have item number 29, Zero Emissions Passenger Rail and Trail Project Update and Infrastructure Evaluation, Design Concepts and Funding Considerations. We have a staff report.
Good morning still, commissioners. My name is Riley Gerbrandt of your staff, Associate Transportation Engineer. Happy to be here this morning presenting this item to you for an update on the Zero Emission Passenger Rail and Trail Project. So at the beginning, I'd like to just lay out what we're going to be covering today. So we're going to cover the progress on the project to date, a summary of the Milestone 3 engagement and key takeaways from Milestone 3, what we heard, as well as cover the infrastructure evaluations that have been ongoing for the project, as well as potential funding opportunities and project next steps. So it's a quick recap. I'll start off. Back in 2012, as you know, the commission acquired the Santa Cruz Branch Rail Line, which provides a unique opportunity for the county as it is a dedicated transportation facility and corridor that connects the largest county cities, as well as the communities in between, and also a connection to the larger state rail network and locations beyond the county. And over the subsequent years from that time, there has been several planning studies which have evaluated the transportation investment options for Santa Cruz County, ultimately landing on the preferred scenario of electric passenger rail with a multimodal trail facility adjacent in the corridor, or for the vast majority of the corridor. In 2022, the commission directed staff to pursue the next steps in developing a passenger rail facility along 22 miles of the Santa Cruz Branch Rail Line, as well as the remaining segments of the Coastal Rail Trail. As a result, the commission awarded a contract to NCR Engineering in 2023 through a competitive RFP process, and work began on the project concept. Next slide. And the map on the screen just provides a brief overview visually of what the project study area entails. The Zero Emission Passenger Rail and Trail Project, or as we call it, ZEPRT on the project team, proposes to upgrade the existing single-track freight facility along the Santa Cruz Branch Rail Line to a shared freight and zero-emission passenger rail and trail facility, constructing the remaining segments of the Coastal Rail Trail alongside the passenger rail facility. Next slide. Now, just building on what Executive Director Ms. Christensen said earlier in this meeting, when we commenced the project activities back in 2023, the project was originally broken up into four milestones, as shown on the screen there today. In December of 2024, we completed Milestone 3, and in the next slides, I'll provide a summary and some key takeaways of Milestone 3. But before I do that, I want to just pause and just share the update on the screen and refer back to the remarks earlier today. The fourth and final project milestone was originally scheduled to be to conclude in the spring of this year. However, in response to the community and stakeholder input received during Milestone 3, it became apparent that additional engineering and community engagement work is needed in order to gain feedback on some of the complex engineering constraints associated with the project's conceptual alignment. For example, along Walker Street here in Watsonville, through the city of Capitola and Aptos Village, as well as along Beach Street in Santa Cruz. These aspects are important to the overall performance and impact of the passenger rail service, and they also affect travel times, ridership forecasts, and project costs. Therefore, it is crucial that the development of the project concept, that station and alignment options are fully evaluated and the community is given ample opportunity and for engagement and input before the project completes the dependent technical analyses. Furthermore, as I'll describe later, the funding outlook for the project has changed since 2022. And as I'll describe later in more detail, the most likely future funding source for preliminary engineering and the remaining environmental work is the Federal Corridor ID Program, or the Corridor Identification and Development Program. However, the soonest that these funds could become available, if prioritized for development of passenger rail along the branch rail line, is not until 2027, likely resulting in slower progress towards completing some of these phases than originally anticipated back in 2022. So for that reason, shown on the screen here today, we're recommending as a project team that Milestone 4 be ongoing from March through August, as Executive Director spoke earlier today. Next slide. So next we'll go into an overview of the public engagement for Milestone 3. Next slide. So briefly on the screen here today and in the staff report are a list of the engagement activities that we completed as a project team. They included three informational community sessions, as shown on the screen here, for funding and service, ridership approach, noise impacts, and quiet zones. We also held key stakeholder meetings and partner agency briefings. We had a virtual open house that was open from October through December 20th, as well as in-person community workshops, and then the public hearing with the commission on December 5th. Next slide. So here are the, on the screen and in the staff report, are the items discussed during the public Milestone 3 engagement. In summary, ridership approach, conceptual alignment updates, station locations and features, quiet zones, funding and service, bridge infrastructure. And during the community workshops, those in attendance had the opportunity by engaging in different activity stations to get information and provide feedback and input on alignment updates, station locations, and station amenities. Next slide. So approximately 135 community members attended the in-person workshops, and more than 2,200 people, our total users, visited the online open house. We had more than 360 comments and hundreds of activity feedback submissions from the workshops. We also tabled at different community events, including the farmers markets and things like that. Key takeaways that we heard, generally speaking, on the screen here, concerns about project costs, feasibility, funding, and environmental impacts. We also had interest from community and stakeholders in more detail regarding the project funding, the ridership forecasts and schedule, as well as greater detail and greater transparency. Hence, some of the recommendation to make Milestone 4 a longer process. Regarding trail and rail alignment key takeaways on the screen, there's community preference for more efficient, the most efficient and least disruptive rail and trail alignments. There was concern regarding perceived cost and strong preference for the least expensive alignment alternative. There was desire for safety for trail and rail users and support for rail and trail alignments near Cabrillo College that provided a connection to the campus. Support for keeping the trail within the right-of-way where possible, and where it may not be possible, such as from 30th to 47th Avenue in Capitola, diversion specifically along J Street, Brommer, and Thompson Street. There were also concerns regarding noise impacts and support for implementing quiet zones and desire for further detail on specific areas of the project alignment. Next slide. There was also one additional community input that I didn't speak on the last slide, but there's also concern regarding stability of certain areas of the corridor for the alignment, such as erosion of the at places along the corridor like Manresa Bluffs and Park Avenue Bluffs in La Selva Beach and Capitola, respectively. So regarding stations and locations and amenities, on the screen is the key things that we heard from Milestone 3 engagement. Preference for a west side service that included a west side Santa Cruz station from the community. Dialogue regarding two station locations in the city of Watsonville, one at the downtown state location and one at Ohlone Parkway. There were prioritization for an interest in specific stations. The ones most likely to be used would be 41st Avenue in Capitola, Pacific Avenue, Beach Street in Santa Cruz, as well as the Aptos Station. And then the additional stations that would be used regularly at the top of those that list were Park Avenue in Capitola, Seascape, 7th Avenue, and Almar Avenue in Santa Cruz, well as Seacliff Beach, and a desire from the community for additional stations that provided beach access and other such amenities. And then strong interest for certain amenities as on the screen there, safety conscious design, ADA compliant and level boarding, shelter, seating, bike parking, public restrooms, and connectivity to other transit modes. Next slide. Right, next slide. What we've been doing since then in response to Milestone 3 feedback that we heard from the community and from stakeholders and the commission was to address specific areas of concern and topics that needed further study. One of those areas, the alignment near Highway 1 in the Cabrillo College area, improvements relating to our considerations relating to sea level rise and coastal erosion, considerations for the Pajaro River Bridge related to the Army Corps of Engineers project, operations and access to properties related to the Walker Street in street alignment here in Watsonville, alignment of rail facility related to coastal cross-section elements along Beach Street in Santa Cruz, Aptos area bridges, bridge replacements due to track geometry alignment changes, and coastal rail trail alignments and trail connections to community resources and existing trail networks. Next slide. And in response to Milestone 3 and the ongoing work that we've been doing as a project team, we have several things coming up over the next several weeks. We have ongoing stakeholder meetings that we are scheduling and coordinating. We have focused community meetings that we are scheduling for April, likely both in Santa Cruz and Watsonville to bring some of the ongoing work that we've been doing to the community and stakeholders regarding the specific alignment challenges that we've encountered, as well as additional informational community sessions. We had one, which I'll refer to later in the report, on March 12th. We're having one on April 1st, and that one's going to be on alignment updates and station updates. I'll talk a little bit about that later in the report. And then likely in May and June, additional information sessions regarding ridership and cost estimates. And then the draft concept report is coming out after that. And then we plan to have the August meeting to review the engagement over the summer regarding the draft concept report, and then the final concept report in the fall. Next slide. Okay, so we can go on to the next slide. Before we begin on the bridge information, just wanted to recap that in 2024, the commission had a commission meeting in April 2024, where there was a presentation by myself and the project team on the approach for bridge design and bridge evaluation for the zero emission passenger rail and trail project. And in that meeting, we outlined the approach that we were taking for the evaluations, as well as the anticipated replacement bridges and how we were going to approach repair bridges and those replacements. And so the ongoing work that we've been doing since then is taking that those commission actions taken in April and developing them to refine recommendations that we're presenting today, as well as we went over in the March 12th meeting. Next slide. Okay, so on March 12th, we had an information session that provided results of the infrastructure evaluation, as well as information on bridges that are recommended for replacement or rehabilitation. There are select slides from that presentation as part of the staff report. So if you want to refer to more specifics, you can refer to the staff report and the attachment to that. So on the screen here today is some of the things that presentation went over. We went over the evaluation of the existing railroad bridges and their components. We evaluated and described the existing span rating as applicable for the bridges that we evaluated. What we're looking there is the bridge loads rating sufficient to the intended loads? And then we summarized the results of our investigations for bridge functionality as well. We looked at bridges that were going over roadways, bridges that were going over creeks and drainages, evaluated the bridges that are existing for horizontal and vertical clearances, as well as hydraulic capacity underneath the bridges. Next slide. So on the screen are all of the bridge segments that were evaluated as part of the project process. As you can see, we have over 30 bridge segments that were evaluated, some of these bridges being well over 100 years old. Many of them were built in the early 1900s. Details assessments have been conducted for each of the bridge for that were being further evaluated. The bridges that were timber and the bridges that were existing steel bridges received a cursory inspection or a moderate level of inspection. The timber ones and the concrete ones. And then we did a more detailed investigation on the steel bridges. And as you can see on the screen, we have recommended to replace 28 of the 33 bridge segments, which is two more than we had originally recommended or thought we would be replacing back in April of last year. And the reason for those two bridges I'll get into in a little bit later in the presentation, in a couple of minutes. So just wanted to highlight that when the commission purchased the rail line in 2012, many of these bridges were already in a state of deterioration, and deterioration on these bridges has continued over the last 15 years. And on the next slide is just a map showing the location of the bridges that we're recommending for replacement, as well as those that we're recommending to keep. Next slide. So when we look at the bridges that we could keep and then those that we're recommending for replacement, we're looking at things like such as on the screen. I mentioned before that we're looking at the hydraulic capacity underneath the bridge. We're looking at the structure depth and the height between the low chord of the structure and the roadway underneath for those that are roadway structures. For those structures, we're engaged with local communities to understand the vertical clearance requirements that they have and their general plans and then their design requirements, trying to meet those as well as the general plan requirements for bike lanes, sidewalks, lane width, et cetera. So our next steps in the project design are developing the conceptual layouts for each of the bridges that we're anticipating replacing as part of the project. Next slide. And so the bridges that we're looking at using in our tool belt for replacing the bridges include those listed on the screen here. Refer back to the staff report and the March 12th meeting for more detail on those. But what we're looking at doing is to have standard bridge types where we can to continue to reduce costs for the bridges. So we're looking at prefabricated concrete spans, rolled steel beam spans, which is the one on the right. And then if you get larger spans, we're looking at other alternatives such as those listed on the screen here. And the idea is to use standard industry freight railroad bridges that we can use that are easily repairable or replaceable in the case that there's damage, easier to maintain, keeping our costs down where we can. Next slide. So in the March 12th meeting, we went over this in more detail. But in summary, when we looked at what is it going to cost to replace the bridges and what type of bridges we're using, recommending for using as for replacements, we looked at bridges that are normally used by the industry here in California. We looked at existing bid results and for existing projects using the most recent information available for those materials. We looked at it at a And then we use that to develop a total bridge cost for those like bridges. And then we reduce that down to a cost per linear foot of bridge. And then we use that as a basis for developing the costs in the, that you'll see in the table on the next screen. One key thing is that when we have these bridge cost estimates, which are the actual construction cost estimates, we build into that at this level of the project design percentage for mobilization, as well as a percentage for bridge contingencies. So on the screen there are some different contingencies items you might come across as you get into more detailed design and in construction. Now, generally at this level for a kind of standard engineering project, you would look at 25 to maybe 40% contingencies for that type of construction. We're here in Santa Cruz and on the Santa Cruz Branch Rail Line, we felt that having a 50% contingency for the construction cost was more appropriate. And that's given a variety of factors, but such things as the environmental sensitivities here in Santa Cruz County, as well as not having a local pool of qualified contractors to do this type of work. When we've hired contractors in the past, they've come from faraway places, and their costs to that they bid to do our bridge projects and other infrastructure projects were considerably higher than we anticipated. And we've, for instance, bridge mobilization, we've often seen something for our local projects here that we've done for rehabs to be more like, you know, 20%. So that 50% contingency allows for those types of things. Now, once we have those bridge costs estimates for construction, as well as the contingencies for the items listed on the screen, including you know, things that might pop up for environmental mitigations, we add in percentages at this level of design to account for other services and other design things that go into it, such as preliminary engineering, construction administration, right-of-way acquisition support, as well as right-of-way purchases themselves. And for the professional services, it's federal guidance at this level of conceptual design to have a 30% contingency on top of for the professional services and project administration. So when you're looking at the numbers, this is kind of the all-in estimated cost for what it would be to replace those bridges and design and do all the associated elements as part of project development. So with that, we'll go to the next slide. And this was presented at the March 12th meeting. For each of the bridge segments that we've evaluated and developed our recommendations for repair or replacement, we've put together a cost estimate for the all-in cost. On the screen also include basic rehabs for some of the concrete bridges. And when you total all up, it's $980 million for the bridge-related elements. Next slide. And what doesn't go into that for in terms of the project are things related to non-bridge infrastructure elements of the project. So track work, the rail segments, or the trail segments, including the trail bridges, corridor retaining walls, et cetera, vehicles, and environmental mitigations that are not related to bridges, to name a few. So one thing that's been asked of the project team is, what are we doing to keep those costs down, and why are we replacing so many bridges? Valid points. What we're trying to do as a project team is to, as I mentioned before, choose industry standard bridges. One thing that we have here in Santa Cruz is that we have a lot of older bridges that have become part of the community, you know, Capitola, for instance. So there's interest from the community in having things that are maybe more iconic or aesthetically pleasing than a standard bridge. So we built that into the contingency costs to allow for some of that in the project. And things to consider when we look at why is this so high? There's a lot of older bridges on our rail line. There's bridges that have had significant deterioration, section loss for a lot of the steel bridges. When you look at, could those bridges be retained And for some of them, the answer is yes, you could retain those bridges. You could do improvements or rehabs for those bridges. The timber bridges, we don't recommend doing that because they're just, you know, the industry is moving away from that. But if you were to rehab a lot of these bridges for a project that we're anticipating would have a design life of 75 years, 100 years, the ongoing operations and maintenance costs associated with trying to keep these bridges in service, and then when they do need replacing in maybe 25 years, taking them out of service once we've got service going on the branch line, we'd have to stop service. Could you build a shoe fly bridge to allow for the construction of a new bridge? In many areas of the right-of-way, that wouldn't be possible unless you have right-of-way acquisitions. If you think of Aptos Village, how are you going to do that with the bridges going of Aptos Creek, Valencia Creek? So when you look at holistically the life cycle of the project, while you can replace or keep some of the bridges, when you look at the overall life cycle cost, it'd be more prudent to replace them as part of the project to get a good quality bridge that you're confident in that will last for the, you know, a 50, 75 year design life or more with good maintenance and operations. So keep that in mind as you're looking at the number, and also keep in mind that when you look for federal and state funding sources to be partners, there's money, there's more often money for capital projects, but less frequently options for ongoing partners for operations and maintenance. Next slide. So next step on the screen here is just a list of several of the things that we're going to be working on to wrap it up. We're doing geotechnical reports. We're looking at what foundation types to use. That information will help us to refine some of the things in the cost estimates based on the appropriate structure types and foundation types for each location. We're developing layout drawings and conceptual designs for each of the bridge locations to be replaced. We're going to update those cost estimates. So once, you know, with the contingency built in, right, you look at how can we reduce the cost by getting, or reduce the uncertainty by getting more information. Once you get more information, you update the cost estimates based on what those new informations provide you. But you can also potentially, you know, at some point you're going to scale back those contingency percentages to account for the greater certainty that you have in the project. And then included in the draft concept report will be a summary for each bridge evaluation and replacement approach. Next slide. So then getting into potential funding opportunities. So funding major capital programs such as Zero Emission Passenger Rail and Trail Project involves a combination of federal, state, and local funding sources. This project would require multiple funding sources to complete the environmental analysis, preliminary and final engineering, right-of-way, construction, as well as operations and maintenance. As I mentioned before, and in the intro to this presentation, the funding outlook for this project has changed since we started it in 2022. Although traditionally there's been few state and federal competitive grant programs that have funded pre-construction activities for capital projects, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act authorized historic funding for the development of an improvement and expansion of intercity passenger rail corridors through the Corridor Identification and Development Program, or Corridor ID, under the Federal Railroad Administration. You can refer to the staff report for more discussion on that if you're interested. There's also been the adoption of the State Rail Plan in January of this year, which identifies intercity passenger rail on the Santa Cruz Branch rail line in the state rail plan and the vision. And let's move on to the next slide. So I mentioned different funding sources from federal. While many grants offer up to 80% maximum contribution, many of these are oversubscribed and you may not get that full contribution amount as they have to spread around the money. As I mentioned before, with the Infrastructure and Jobs Act and the Corridor ID program and the state rail plan, there's been a push for funding sources to orient towards identifying and developing new intercity rail program, services in the United States and California. In order to maximize federal investments, the state is also prioritizing funding for capital projects and pre-construction activities that align with the federal investment priorities. So although you have, generally speaking, the FRA and the FTA as the two federal funding sources, we highlight that the FTA, which is the Federal Transit Administration, they usually have programs that provide no more than 50% of the capital project costs for these types of projects. And with the FTA projects, the local agencies funds the pre-construction activities and 100% or with state help. And then those costs are go towards that 50% match. But we would have to fund it up front. So with the Corridor ID program, they actually provide up to 80% funding for the preliminary engineering and the environmental documentation phase. So while we might have to wait longer, which I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, that would potentially give us a better opportunity to complete the work. So the bottom slide there, or bullet there, is aligning the branch line to rail service plans with state rail plan, which mirrors the federal plans and project priorities, would maximize funding eligibility and technical support through state and federal programs for the Zero Emission Passenger Rail and Trail project on the branch line. And with that, we get to the recommended action for today, and that would be for the commission to direct staff to pursue intercity passenger rail service on the branch line by aligning the project concept with what is envisioned in the California State Rail Plan. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you for staying with me. Appreciate you that. And I'll be available for questions.
Thank you for the thorough presentation.